to the Leamington United Mennonite Church Sunday Morning Message Podcast. For more information about Leamington United Mennonite Church, please visit our website at www.lumc.ca.
Sermons follow the season of reading passages. Some passages seem to be a little more sermon friendly. This one wasn't exactly that. So it took me a while to decide what to speak on, and an event a few weeks ago helped me decide that, and so here we go. We have left behind most of the earlier stories recorded by Luke in Acts. We have moved into a more reporting or recording mode. The story of Jesus returning to heaven, the story of Philip and the Ethiopian eunuch, of miracles performed by the apostles, the raising of Tabitha, the miraculous escape from prison, the story of the stoning of Peter or Stephen, the story of Peter and the white sheet coming down from heaven with what were thought to be unclean foods, and then also the memorable story of Paul's conversion on his way to Damascus. The Apostle Paul lived a hard and sometimes dangerous life. His enemies said he was a rabble-rouser, a troublemaker, who slandered Jews and dishonored the temple, and thereby dishonoring the almighty Roman Empire. But in reality, though, it was Paul's enemies who were the slanderers. "We have found this man a plague," they said, "a creator of dissension among all the Jews throughout the world, and a ringleader of the sect of Nazarenes." Such charges could get one thrown in prison, and in Paul's case, they did. Few dared to accompany or visit Paul under this sort of dangerous and humiliating circumstance. In chapter 23, we read of a plot to kill Paul. The Jews wanted him dead, and so the Roman commander sent him to the Roman governor Felix to be tried at Caesarea, thereby rescuing him from certain death. Paul confessed and answered the accusations. He says, "I'm worshiping the same God you worship, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. I share your hope in God. I believe everything to which you also agree, everything that is written in the law and the prophets." Felix, the Roman governor turned judge, stood in the chamber wrestling with a dilemma. No real evidence had been produced against Paul, but still he hesitated to release him because he wanted to remain in good standing with the Jews. Felix also hoped that Paul might bribe him, but that didn't happen. Only one solution seemed appropriate. He would postpone the verdict and send Paul to custody, although a very humane custody, for 2 years. Also, relationships between Felix, his third wife Drusilla, who was daughter of Herod Agrippa, and so on, further entangled the hearing. The Jews were relentless. Now Felix's successor, Festus, bore the responsibility. Not only a mob of Jews, but also the Sanhedrin spoke vehemently in favor of Paul's death. Festus did refuse the Jews' request to have Paul sent to trial in Jerusalem. That would have provided an easy ambush site for him to be killed. Festus then tried him in Caesarea, and again a series of accusations uttered against Paul were unsubstantiated. Somewhat in desperation, this governor gave Paul the option of being tried in Jerusalem, but Paul refused. Instead, he appealed to Caesar and was granted permission to be tried in Rome. Paul had recalled how earlier Christ's Spirit had told him to go to Rome. There in Rome, Paul was to testify about him as he had done in Jerusalem. And now he would have that chance. Paul's defense was not really defensive. He described his upbringing as a Pharisee. He admitted to standing trial for the hope of the promise made by God. This hope, he continued, included a number of things. It meant that God would be their God and they would be his people, and that he would dwell with them forever. But for Paul, this was tied to the resurrection of Jesus. This resurrection confirmed Jesus as the one chosen by God, the anointed one. Now, the problem with this logic. Resurrection implied death. Jesus' resurrection implied he had died and indeed had been crucified. The Jews, however, were not willing to concede that their Messiah had been crucified. And here's the rub. Not only crucified, but crucified by them. Paul related his experience on the road to Damascus, his confrontation with the Lord whom to that day he had fought, killing the followers of the way and persecuting Christians. In an overview of these chapters, a person by the name of Stott writes, "It was a dramatic moment when the holy and humble apostle of Jesus Christ stood before their representative of the worldly, ambitious, morally corrupt family of the Herods, who for generation after generation had set themselves in opposition to the trust and righteousness of the gospel." Well, when we read that, our minds travel to the dark days following the Last Supper, where Jesus too is apprehended, falsely accused by those with whom he shared a history and a story. Felix wasn't the only one caught having to make a decision he dreaded to make. Pilate struggled with that too. A mirror image of that courtroom now plays itself out some 50 years later. In these chapters, Luke records how Paul's circumstances seem to be stacked against him. He is either going to be given to the Jews to be killed, or he will be at the mercy of the Roman government. And this writer states further, "God's ways with his children are often unfathomable. There's always perfect wisdom and purpose in God's ways, but until we die, we will always see in a mirror dimly. This side of eternity, we live by faith, not by sight." The life of faith is not an easy life. Let's step out of the courtroom for a minute. 10 days ago, my family gathered in a large hall with close to 300 lawyers and judges. There was no case being tried. We were all there to celebrate the graduation of the 2017 law class. Successful students were bestowed with a Juris Doctor degree, and we were there to honor our daughter-in-law, Christina. She was one of the graduates. I was not expecting some of the comments from speakers that evening that I heard. The school Christina attended is the University of Detroit, Mercy. Most public commencement exercises strive to be relatively politically correct and neutral in their comments, trying not to defend anyone. Seldom does one hear comments that hint at our faith lives, but that was not the case here. I was heartened by comments from a number of the speakers. In particular, I was captivated by a metaphor that was highlighted a few times. And this quote was borrowed from a powerful speech championing civil rights in the 1960s. And you can probably guess that the speaker was Martin Luther King. And he writes, "The arc of the moral universe is long, and it bends toward justice. The arc of the moral universe is very long, and it bends toward justice." This quote is first attributed, though, to a Theodore Parker, a minister born in 1810, who, like King, worked for civil rights and called for the abolition of slavery. As I thought about these words, an image of an arc bending towards something somewhere came to mind, almost like a rainbow, where we want to find where the rainbow ends. We're told that the universe, all of creation, is somehow in the care and control of our God. And despite our efforts, some noble, some destructive, all are working toward that end envisioned by God, and that will come. Like Parker, who first coined this phrase, I do not pretend to know the trajectory or the way that the world is unfolding. I can perhaps have a bit of understanding of what the path has been like. That, of course, is the challenge for historians. But I can't see into years from now. I cannot see where this path, this arc, will lead. I cannot know for certainty what the world my grandchildren will inherit will be like, nor how it will get there. Like Parker again, I cannot calculate the curve and completely figure it out by looking. So he too could not see where the world was heading, nor what kind of path or arc it was taking. But he adds, I divine it by conscience. He searches by some other means, like we divine water with a birch rod. In 1 Corinthians 13:12, Paul writes, "We don't yet see things clearly. We're squinting in a fog, peering through a mist. But it won't be long before the weather clears and the sun shines." Appropriate for this morning. "We'll see it all then, see it all as clearly as God sees it, knowing him directly, just as he knows us." Let's assume for a moment that this arc, this path that the world is on, is bending toward justice, toward decency, toward righteousness, toward a healthy attitude, or toward a more noble morality or Christian kingdom. And the world continues on this arc. So are we done then? Is the world heading toward justice and allowing us just to sit back and wait? Has God set this in motion and we just sit and let this path complete its course? Or let this arc bend toward it where it was meant to bend? That would be nice. Maybe. But that's not what Parker and Martin Luther King meant. That is not what the gospel writers meant. That is not what Jesus means or what the prophets meant. He has told you, O mortal, what is good. Excuse me. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and to love kindness and to walk humbly with your God? This famous line was originally intended as a spiritual truth, not a political one. It's very clear that apart from Jesus Christ, the idea of a moral arc of the universe was inconceivable to Martin Luther King. It only made sense within the context of a faith statement. The moral arc of the universe is about transforming that which is to that which can and must be, the already and the not yet. The most dangerous mistake we can make is to be blind to the continued injustice or assume that this moral arc, this universe, moves toward justice on its own and that we are not a part of the bending, someone writes. So are we done then? Not at all. We are called to grab hold of this ark and to bend it toward justice. Here's where we take our stand in the courtroom of the world. We are called to help bend the arc of the universe toward justice. Back for a moment to the commencement exercises for the law class at University of Detroit Mercy. How fitting. For a room hosting the new men and women looking to take their stand behind the bench in the courtrooms of our world, called to be purveyors of justice. And now back to Paul, where we left him in Caesarea on his way to Rome to be tried in the Roman court. Paul knew that we are all called to help bend the arc to justice and righteousness toward a kingdom here on earth. Paul was relentless in his efforts, unfailing in his commitment, undying in his loyalty to Christ. And like so many others before him and after him, Paul too sensed where the ark was going and how to bend it. So he grabbed hold of it and bent it toward justice. So how do we do this? I want to leave you with a last story, actually two little stories, about two persons' reflections. The source for this story or these reflections is the Mennonite, the blog in the Mennonite, one of our denominational periodicals. And this blog was posted in response to members being asked by their pastor at Rainbow Mennonite Church in Kansas City for personal reflections. The pastor asked a few members of the congregation to reflect upon the words of Micah 6:8. What do these words mean to you? How do you understand them? What do you think of when you hear them? These are the words. He has told you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you but to do justice and love kindness and to walk humbly with your God? I'll describe the words of two of the members. Renee Reimer was one of those members asked for a reflection. In her reflection, she spoke of the legacy of another person, a person by the name of Rachel Corey. Rachel Corey was an American college student who traveled to the Gaza Strip in 2003. Rachel Corey was killed there after being run over by an armed bulldozer operated by the Israeli Defense Forces while trying to demolish a Palestinian home. These were her words. I had the honor of sharing the collection of Rachel Corey's words with others in January of 2013, 2 years following my return from the Holy Land. And Renee writes, I tell you this because this was my journey to permanently having a text or a tattoo engraved on my foot for that matter. The text engraved on her foot had these words, do justly, love mercy, and walk humbly. This tattoo is my constant reminder to not lose hope despite schoolwork, life, and the everyday struggles that I may face in life. This is a reminder that with every step I take, I do so with love, to step humbly on this journey, to constantly seek the justice of the world beyond the daily tasks I have laid out before me. And she continues, at the end of a long day, I take off my socks and see this text and think, tomorrow is another day to practice spreading hope, love, and peace. And she uses the word practice very intentionally because it's not perfect, so I may continue to strive to spread that love. As I embark on my next journey overseas, I not only carry these words in my heart, but also on my walking foot. Renee, together with a few others, composed and presented a one-woman play about this heroine, Rachel Corey. Now a second and final reflection, this reflection from Joshua Chittum, who was also a member of the Rainbow Mennonite Church, on a quote from Micah 6:8 about doing justice. He spoke of a trip too, a visit to Japan where a tour guide led his group to the rubble of a cathedral destroyed by the Fat Man bomb in Nagasaki. Amid the sight, He saw the statue of St. Agnes, her backside charred and molten, displayed on a black pedestal, standing with a weight of witness on her shoulders, was a statue of St. Agnes, who was found deceased amid the rubble, holding her lamb. He adds, I looked into her eyes and tried to imagine the unimaginable, feel the force of the shockwave that knocked her to the ground, see the sacred space crumbling around her in the cathedral, and touch the heat of her inflamed exterior. And he writes, I longed to stay in her presence. This representation of destroyed lives, of decimating the sacred, of pure injustice. But the tour guide ushered us along, and time would not allow me to stand face to face with her any longer. It's just like life, he writes. Take a fleeting look at injustice and then move on as if nothing happened. But that day, standing beneath a stone saint, a tantrum began to brew that was not satisfied with pushing aside all the pain of the past and the present. Intensifying my anger was a quote by a former UN General Secretary. Painted in black letters on a white wall, it stated the mission of the UN not to take humanity to heaven, but to save humanity from hell. The hurt of those words slowed my step, though I cannot succinctly define justice. Merely avoiding hell does not come close. Well, where are we then? At my age, I often lament how I wish I could have done more. My classroom work is done. Professions and occupations find their end. But my real passion and my real prayer needs still to be to grab hold of that arc that the world is traveling on as best I can and help bend it toward justice. The arc of the moral universe is a long, long arc, but it needs help bending it toward justice. I need to reach up and grab hold and do my part in the bending of this arc. Paul did so as he preached the resurrection of Christ and the fullness of life possible. Paul's court appearances clearly indicated not everyone agreed with him. Not everyone could see what the world could be. Like the newly acclaimed lawyers of the University of Detroit Mercy, we too take our stand in the courtroom to purvey justice. Renee Reimer tattooed Micah 6:8 onto the arch of her foot. It would guide her steps as she met others on her path. Excuse me. Joshua Chittum wanted to stay longer at the statue of St. Agnes and face the violence of the bomb that had showered evil beyond imagine upon people in its path. I think already Renee and Joshua embody the resurrection of which Paul spoke. Renee and Joshua, I'm counting on you to continue to grab hold of the arc which our world is traveling on and bend it toward justice. And may God help you to that end. You have to, Renee and Josh. You have to. Because I have two grandkids who are depending upon you. And they are traveling with you on this same arc. Amen.
If you have questions or comments about the previous recording, please send us an email to lumc@live.com. If you would like more information about Leamington United Mennonite Church, please visit our website at www.lumc.ca.